Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
Tom Brady is my Lord and Savior.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
It's football time in Houston, baby. The Texans finished the preseason perfect. 3-0 Super Bowl champs. Question mark? We'll see, but they did get a win over the 49ers. 17-0 last night. I'm Vanessa Richardson. Paul Gallant, my meow buddy, is to the left of me, and then Sean Mapes is behind the glass, as always.
She calls me her meow buddy because I can't stop meowing to this song that I heard on an Instagram reel. It's been a week-long torturous process.
I mean, you guys don't understand. It's like we'll randomly be talking something Texans related, and he'll go, meow, 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 meow.
Yep.
It's just a lot of meowing.
Listen, as you have begun to learn this week, my brain just wanders off in the middle of anyone talking.
Yeah.
And all I hear is meowing.
Yeah, we're having Sean Mapes, by the way, do pop quizzes, Professor Mapes, to see if Paul listens to anything.
Because we're trying to make evolve as a human.
So pre-show, we're talking about the show Friends. Paul, what friend did Vanessa associate herself
Joey.
With?
Joey.
Okay.
Wow.
There we go.
Today is the day.
1-0 today, baby.
Until 10:30, 10:45. That comes
3-0 for the Texans as they finish the preseason. I was there last night because I'm a committed Big J journalist. I say that half jokingly, but we had ESPN 97.5. We had a good turnout. Other than the flagship, we might have had the most representatives there. I saw everything kind of that I wanted to see. I said that I wanted the defense to at least continue to look competent. I thought Davis Mills looked better than he did in the other preseason games. And great stuff from Dameon Pierce.
Dameon Pierce.
Running back one, question mark?
No,
I mean,
that's
I think
over.
It's safe to say, right?
That's over. And look.
You had the double TV setup, by the way.
I did. So I could watch the little Astros and see 7-1 Trey Mancini go yard. I'm embracing it. I'm going with it. But Dameon Pierce is plus 2,200 to win Rookie of the Year. BUSR.com/ESPN.
Shout out to BUSR.
Just a friendly reminder, he looked great. And I think that we do have to give the Texans offensive line a lot of credit for paving the way for Dameon Pierce, especially considering that Laremy Tunsil's not out there. Kenyon Green isn't there yet, but Lovie Smith intimated in his press conference afterwards that we might see Green in the starting lineup sooner rather than later. Pierce was explosive, and I'm glad that everyone got to see what we've all seen in training camp. And, of course, you saw a little bit of it in the Saints game, too. This has been him all training camp.
And this was a national game, mind you. So it was cool to see, to look at the Twitter timeline and to see people that, understandably so, are not watching much of the Texans say, "Who is this Dameon Pierce kid?
It does kind
Why
of
Why didn't
suck
Dan Mullen use him more?"
If you're in a fantasy football league, though.
Oh, yeah. The secret's out.
Now the secret's out.
The secret is out. Lovie Smith says the secret's out on Dameon Pierce as well. He was impressed with the running back.
They show you who should start, who should play. Damon has taken advantage of every opportunity he's gotten. I think for everybody that's seen him play the few games he's played, you've been impressed.
It's a change in the way that we've heard Lovie talk about him. Because earlier, he was deferential to the other running backs. All these guys are working their hardest. I remember when I asked him a question about it a couple of Saturdays ago, he immediately said, "Well, we got a nice running back room." But I think, as you said, that's the secret's out of the bag. And this guy is the guy. And, you know, also interestingly enough, this was on the Amazon broadcast. Lovie Smith had a sideline interview. And he said, "Look, we're a running football team." Hearing that was interesting because I think it also sort of changes your expectations for Davis Mills and maybe what this team can be this year. They've been so bad at running the football the last 2 years.
You've brought up consistently that they're going to need running back help because of Davis Mills throwing the deep ball and the issues that he's had with that.
Right. I mean, look, you need to have something that sets you apart. And I understand that in today's NFL, most teams are trying to go the way of, hey, we're going to throw and we're going to throw because if we're playing against a Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen, that's the only
way
that we can win.
Beat him, yeah.
But that's not what this team is right now. Davis Mills might be someone who impresses us, but at this point in time, Davis Mills is essentially a rookie and a half. You know, he is going into now his first full season as the guy.
Yeah, because he didn't start all of last season.
Right.
Yeah.
It was Tyrod Taylor to begin the year. So with now this being a Davis Mills year, I still think that you want to put the majority of the workload on the running game. And we'll see if a different offensive line than last year, which was one of the worst in the game, and a running back core that features a running back with actual explosiveness like Damian Pierce. We'll see if that's different this time around. But Lovie Smith thinks this is a running football team.
I was going to say, I will say this. Marlon Mack had some bright spots last night as well. I like Marlon Mack and Damian Pierce and a couple of the other guys better than the Philip Lindsay, David Johnson, what is Mark Ingram going to do at this late stage in his career deal that we had.
You didn't say Rex Burkhead.
Last year.
Do you like Rex Burkhead?
We're iffy on Rex Burkhead. He had one or two games last year where he really stood out, and I know the Chargers. Front office likes him, so he's not going anywhere, let's be honest. I want to play this sound from Davis Mills on a bad throw that he had, and then I want your thoughts because you had some interesting ones.
That one, that throw to Chris Moore down in the end zone after our defense got a turnover, that was a big one. Like I just said, it's where you miss, not where you end up throwing it, so got to give him a better ball away from the defender's leverage. And then the other throw I went back is probably the go ball to Nico on the right sideline that we ended up getting pass interference on, but I just hung that one up and underthrew it and would like to put a little more on it so we can probably, end up scoring on that play rather than just getting the pass interference call.
I'm so glad he said that about the last one, Vanessa. I was pissed when he underthrew that ball and then the Amazon broadcast was sort of explaining, well, they told Davis Mills that he shouldn't overthrow Nico Collins. And I'm like, dude, he had two steps on the defender. If Mills hits that throw, that's a 40 to 50-yard gain. And Mills' deep ball accuracy, I do think it's iffy at this point in time. So I'm glad he brought up the two throws that he could have done a better job on. The throw that he had to Chris Moore in the end zone, that was a difficult play. The defender was in a really good position there. And Moore did almost make an incredible catch over the back of him, but the defender kept with it. He punched the football out. This was a C-plus performance from Davis Mills, which, by the way, is good. I think that very often you take a look at the grades that are given online for like a draft class for anything. It's almost always B's and A's. My God, these schools.
Right.
These schools these days, they're not as tough on their kids. This was an above satisfactory performance. I like the way that he rebounded from that sack that he took on the first play of the game. And he converts a third and long to Chris Conley. And he made a nice little deft maneuver to avoid getting his leg amputated by a defender who was called for a roughing the passer. I thought the first drive, he looked pretty good. There are other moments where I'm like, all right, there's still growth that needs to happen, and I don't think we should get too excited about Mills. But to go back to that comment, I'm glad that he brought it up.
Yeah,
that he said, I need to be better here.
Kurt Heinisch was pretty impactful last night. Three tackles for a loss and a sack. I liked what I saw from him.
Very nice. Because he wears number 69.
Okay. We did not see Roy Lopez because he has a soft tissue injury. But again, just compared to what we had last year, I think that Roy Lopez is going to continue to evolve as a good draft pick.
I agree. And Heinisch, I do think, factors into the defensive line conversation.
Yep.
Look, this was a terrible run defense, too, last year. And you need to have more bodies that can stop things up front, especially if you're not really 100% sold on the linebacker core. Other good defensive performances, Vanessa. Jalen Petrie's been good all training camp. He is always around the football. And I like seeing that out of a safety. I know Lovie Smith likes to talk to these guys about forcing turnovers. And if you remember from back in the day, Charles Tillman with the Chicago Bears is one of the best like fumble forcers that we've ever seen. I'm curious as to if Petrie always being around the football, if that's the next step of his game. Steven Nelson had a good game at cornerback too. We didn't really see much Derek Stingley, but Steven Nelson, I felt like, made a nice play down the sideline. And Jerry Hughes, 13-year veteran. I'm surprised. I did not think that we would see him show that kind of mobility. There was one play early on where he let Trey Lance get outside of him, and I was like, maybe he's showing his age there. But I thought he had a really good night, and that was a good addition that they made. 13 years into the league, he's still looking pretty good.
I was going to say, he's got to be, let's see, he is 34. So, for the NFL, that is no spring chicken.
No, not at all.
The Amazon broadcast, and we're going to get into this later on the show as well. Quick thoughts. I thought Kirk Herbstreit and Al Michaels sounded like they've worked together for 20 years. I thought they were fantastic. The pregame show was great. They didn't try to do too much. I was really worried that they were going to be like, let's make Fitzmagic be the weird guy and let's have Richard Sherman be the aggressive guy. They both were polished. They were chill. The graphics, they weren't trying to do too much. It was like the opposite of what we've seen with the Apple MLB broadcast where Apple tried to do too much and be weird and all that. I thought it was really good.
I like the whole roster outside of Kirk Herbstreit, but
you're not a Kirk fan.
We'll get into that more. Not when it comes to the NFL. They have a lot of talented people that are working on it. The music, still kind of iffy on. What I thought was really impressive about them, imagine it's your first time together as a team on TV, and in the background, the audio is completely drowning out everything that you're saying. Because the pregame show, Vanessa, like, you know, that was an empty stadium. They were just playing music, and they had the cheerleaders dancing behind them. You could not hear a word that any of those four said, and they kept their composure. And, I mean, that's a sign of a good team. Now it's just a matter of, okay, well, how do they blend it all together when they actually can hear each other?
I do want to see Fitzpatrick's personality a little more, but I thought Andrew Whitworth, for his first time being on TV, Richard Sherman's first time, Fitzmagic's first time.
Sherman was pulling references, which I was like, hell yeah. Richard Sherman pulled a Star Wars reference. Yeah. I was like, damn, bro, I didn't know you went like that.
He was really impressive. So I'm excited to see what they can do. I thought that was a good team for sure. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we talk a little bit of Astros. Plus, what are your thoughts on Ryan Pressly? That's next.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, the Astros take the series against the Minnesota Twins with a sweep, a 6-3 win last night. Paul and I have a little bit of a disagreement about the person that we're about to talk about. Strong opinions all around Astros Nation on Trey Mancini. Has he earned a regular spot in the lineup? We know that when he was brought here, one of the names of the game for him was versatility. James Click saying we can use him wherever we want him. Dusty Baker echoing that. But one Joel Blank has had very strong feelings about him as well. What are your thoughts?
So look, he's good. He has shown power. I do want not to cape for Dusty Baker here. I do want to say, let's not overstate what he is. He has been productive. He also strikes out a lot. I mean, he had 3 strikeouts last night. Now, he did have a very important hit, but there's a part of me, this is not defending Dusty. I do think he should be in the lineup more. I just feel like let's not make Trey Mancini out to be like Babe Ruth or Barry Bonds or something like that, and Dusty Baker's keeping him on the bench. He is a guy that we've seen have some issues in the field as a left fielder and is a tricky position to play him. I mean, where do you put him? Do you put him at first base? Do you bench Yuli Gurriel for him? I think some days that makes sense, but Gurriel hasn't been as bad as he was to open the year of late. So it's a little tricky, I think, when it comes to putting Mancini in the lineup, but the guy delivers.
He does deliver, and he delivered last night. This is what a Mancini homer sounded like last night.
5 for 19, 3 walks, 7 strikeouts. Drills this one high and deep. 4. Forget about it. Boom, boom, done it again. A 3-run home run for Trey Mancini. And the Astros out in front 4-1. Boom, boom with the Trey bomb.
7-1 Trey.
Yeah, I know. See, okay.
7-1 Trey.
Are we going with boom, boom?
No.
I feel like there's a lot. I mean, I know we probably can't do Mancini Mafia, technically.
Listen, Vanessa, you have the power here.
Yeah.
I'm not on the Astros broadcast.
I tried
broadcast.
Mancini Linguini. That really didn't take off. I gotta tell you.
You know what? Like I thought it was corny yesterday. I've embraced it. 7-1 Trey.
According to Wikipedia, his nickname
Vanessa doesn't like it.
His nickname, it's terrible. Boomer was originally Boom Boom after Ray Mancini. Ray Mancini was a former professional boxer. So Ray Mancini's nickname was Boomer, Boom Boom. So that's what they called Trey Mancini at Notre Dame. Because I didn't understand that when I heard it last night.
Okay, wow. Who gave him that nickname? Was it some random person?
It's Notre Dame, right?
Yeah.
They're not going to be too controversial. But it has been a conversation. He has 6 home runs, 16 RBI, and 18 games since being traded from the Orioles. I'm with you in that I don't understand all the Dusty Baker hate. I think it's a lot of nitpicking. And again, we talk about how spoiled we are as Astros fans. But do you see a scenario where Trey Mancini, before the playoffs start, is in that lineup regularly?
I think they'll find a way to make it happen. I just wonder how. That's really the big question. I think it's easier said than done. There are some fair criticisms of Dusty Baker this year. I understand now, though, having seen a little bit of Mancini out in the field, not playing first base, not as designated hitter, he is not good in left field. So that, and considering that the Astros have this tiny little dinky left field, that he is an issue there, that he can't make a throw home without it bouncing twice. Yordan's the only one that should be getting those reps in left field. So now it's just, how can you put Mancini in the lineup every night and feel good about it? I wonder. I really do. It's tough.
You have a friend that said that he's kind of feast or famine in Baltimore.
True.
And we've seen a little bit of that. Jeremy Pena had an RBI double with two outs in the eighth to make it 6-3. Pena continues, I think, to really lessen that blow of Carlos Correa's exit.
Yeah, he's at least doing a little bit better than he had been when he was really slumping. So now he's kind of, I think, leveling out. And you've seen him, you know, head towards the back of the lineup again. I will say, you know, another addition to the lineup last night, this is the guy that I feel like should be in the lineup more. Christian Vasquez is 2-for-3 last night.
You are a Christian Vasquez stan.
Well, free Christian Vasquez. This Martin Maldonado stuff, I get it. They all love Martin Maldonado. You don't want to put him on the bench. He's hitting like 103. He's hitting negative 54, you know? Like, can we please just put the guy in who has the better bat? The defense is marginal. I don't believe the idea that Maldonado, four nights out of six, is giving you more value than Christian Vasquez's bat.
What do you think the holdup is?
Maldonado's respect.
Yeah.
It's legitimately a matter of that.
The fact that the aces, like the JV likes him. Lance
yeah.
Colors Jr. likes him.
But yet, you had Vasquez batting, what, fifth last night? And I mean, he delivered, you know? And they have to find a way to put him in the lineup more. I saw a tweet from John Granato last night about, hey, like, I mean, maybe put Vasquez at DH from time to time. How about we find a compromise here? How about we put the guy in to more spots than just catcher? But that, again, draws you back to where we're talking about with how do you put Mancini in the lineup? How do you put Vasquez in the lineup? I am showing a little more empathy to Dusty as far as how difficult it is to put this lineup together.
I think that Christian Vasquez got off to a more awkward start. Okay, he's not like Trey Mancini, where Mancini came in and had a home run like the first three games he started. But you have to remember, Vasquez was traded from the team that was on the field. He had, I think, mentally a little bit more of a difficult time. And he basically said that at the podium, where, because remember, he was like, maybe I could come back to Boston after this season. I mean, I do think he's coming around, and a lot of people are saying what you're saying. Ryan Pressly, you have thoughts. He was not in last night.
Yeah, put on the injured list. Now,
IL.
Not necessarily needed last night. Give credit to the bullpen and Rafael Montero, who actually had a nice performance at the end of the game. But I do think that with the contract that you gave Ryan Pressly, and with how relievers can kind of jump from year to year, and now just wondering about some of the games that Pressly has missed and the way he's been used this year, you know, I see him move to this injured list, and I am a little bit concerned going forward. I'm not sure that this is something that necessarily just goes away, right? Because, we're not talking about, like, an arm or a shoulder. We're talking about a neck here, right? So it's...
Also, how do you injure your neck? Is it from the throwing motion?
You can
anything neck-related creeps me out.
You can
neck
hurt your neck.
Or back.
Have you ever hurt your neck, like, you wake up and your neck feels sore after sleeping?
My back. Yeah, it's happened a little bit more in the last probably year or so, I think, as you get a little bit older. But anything neck-related, I think, is intimidating to me, as is, like, anything back-related, because when you start talking about spinal infusions, neck infusions, whatnot. And we really don't have a lot of info on Pressly.
Neck can go to back. It's one of those things where all it takes is a couple of nerves to be out of whack for your arm to maybe not be able to throw things the way that you want to.
Neck spasms. Seth Martinez was recalled from AAA Sugarland. Rolando is on the phone and would like to chat about the Stros. What's up, Rolando?
Hey, what's up, guys?
Yo.
Hey. Hey, so I'm going to the game tonight, and I'm sitting in the section 153 on the first row. I hope I can catch a home run.
Hell yeah.
That's awesome.
Are you going to push kids to the side to catch a home run?
What was that?
Are you really committed? Would you push kids to the side to catch a home run?
I don't know. My pregnant girlfriend's coming with me, so I don't know.
See, you know what?
No, you got to show her that you're going to be a good dad. Nope.
Good job, Rolando.
I'll tell you this. If I have a beer in my hand, I am not dropping one. One drop is not coming out my beard.
Unless, though, it comes at your pregnant lady, because then, I mean, you have to get in the way. You can't be like that one guy that went viral like 10 years ago for getting out of the way from a ball that actually hit his girlfriend. You can't do that.
Congratulations, by the way, to you and your lady friend. What do you want to talk about Astros-wise?
Thank you. I'm sorry. Real quick, Paul.
Yeah?
If I went viral, that would be awesome.
No,
just like Jerry Jones.
Not for your pregnant wife hitting my ball. No.
But anyway, all right, here I go. So Vasquez, he's 11 for 18 on his last at bat. That should like really speak for itself. And he defensively wise, he's not much worse than Maldi. And I saw something on the internet yesterday, guys, that really disturbed me. It's about Deshaun Watson. It's Brown fans. There was a dad and his son. It said, "F them, H-O-E-S."
Saw that.
Your son holding that. And then another guy was holding a sign that said, "B-I-T-C-H, give me a massage." Like, what? Like, what is going on? What is that?
I know.
Is disgusting.
It is disturbing. Yeah, thank you, Rolando. Definitely disturbing. And
I saw those too.
As Rolando, you start your journey as a parent, if that's your first child, don't be like that. And I think you should be fine.
See, I feel
the bar
like
is low nowadays.
He's saying all the right things. We feel very good about Rolando's future child and the hands that he is in. And the thing he brought up about Vasquez, that's the other thing, too. Look, okay, sure, Maldonado's a defensive mastermind. Is Vasquez an idiot behind the plate? No, he's not. He's a major league catcher. I don't think it's going to be this massive catastrophe. Maldonado's not behind the plate, and it's Vasquez. That's it. That's all I'm trying to say. And
What is happening?
What is going on? I'll tell you what's going on. Dusty Baker and the Astros clubhouse have a little too much respect for Martin Maldonado.
We'll talk
only
more about
Biden's
this
America,
throughout the show,
with inflation
Rolando.
Going through the roof.
Thank you for your call, Rolando. Coming up, we are going to talk about the NFL, some of the biggest stories around the NFL, and that'll be next on Vanessa and Gallant. Stay with us.
You are listening to...
Hey! Yeah, you! You better be listening to ESPN 97.5. And don't you dare turn that down.
ESPN 97.5.
We're ready for some football, baby.
The countdown to the NFL season continues with Vanessa and Gallant.
Less than 2 weeks, guys. 13 days until the NFL regular season kicks off. We can't wait. I got my taste of preseason football, which I actually do not hate last night. But the real thing starts in 13 days. Who is your number 13?
It has to be Dan Marino.
Laces out.
Dan Marino is one of the greatest quarterbacks ever. I will say, though, having grown up towards the end of Dan Marino's career, I have different memories of Dan Marino.
Okay. The love child? Did he act with the CBS production assistant?
That might be an off-season topic for next year.
Right.
I had never heard that until this morning when you brought that up during our
Dan
show
Marino,
prep conversation.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. How many of you have love children?
Wrap it up. That is my advice for NFL players. Hey, Dan Marino is also someone who has a bit of a temper, like this time when he was trying to communicate his thoughts on inside the NFL.
I talked to my man Terrell Buckley last week in Miami. He was on a bye week, by the way, playing golf. He told me that defense is blocked.
Oh, my God.
Everyone just looks at him and they're like, what's going on? And apparently this is the only time that Dan Marino's had these issues, when in the midst of television performances, here is Dan Marino doing an advertisement for something and eventually going Bill O'Reilly mode.
You'll get round-trip airfare and tickets to a game, a complete uniform, and a chance to meet me. Stay tuned. I'll have details on how to enter, and we'll be announcing a winner later tonight. Did not flub at all.
No, it wasn't a flub. It was
there was no flub. It was not a flub.
You want to see that playback?
No, come on. Let's do it.
I remember when that got released. Yeah. It's awkward.
It kept going, too. There's a little more on this little interaction.
Stay tuned. I'll have details on how to enter, and we'll be announcing a winner later tonight.
Perfect.
Send it in.
You want to see a playback on it?
Nope. I don't want to see.
I mean, why the anger?
He's just an angry guy.
He's just entitled. And he sounds very Italian.
to make a reference to when I was a little kid watching football and watching Dan Marino, the Patriots were playing the Dolphins in one game, and Marino threw an interception. They zoom on his face as he's walking off the field. He is pissed. He is swearing. My mom, Kitsy, comes into
Shout
the room.
Out to Kitsy, we love you.
And she's like, wow, I don't like him. He's just an angry, mean man. I'll never forget that for the rest of my life.
Our moms are similar. Yeah, my mom will say that. Oh, what a Teddy Bridgewater is so classy for going to that young man's birthday party. I saw it on the Today Show.
That was very
classy. We love our moms. We do not love when players throw helmets at each other and are violent, which is what, well, you might like it. First of all, I don't understand who thought that it would be a good idea to have the Rams and Bengals have a joint practice.
Seriously.
That makes no sense.
They just played each other in a Super Bowl. They hate each other.
I mean, like, there were a couple of fights, a couple of scuffles or whatever at Texans-Lions combined practice. Or Texans, excuse me, let's start over. Colts-Lions combined
Correct.
Practice. And those teams have, like, no beef or history.
They're just in
it
the
happens
Midwest.
Every time. And so this was a bad idea. And as predicted, there are different versions of this story. The Cincinnati Inquirer did a great job of capturing the photos. Shout out to my guys, Sam, there. But you could clearly see Aaron Donald take a helmet and, like, bash it on another person.
Yeah. He's done this before. We're going to talk about this a little bit longer in the next hour. But Aaron Donald is not anyone I would want to trifle with.
Yeah, well, first of all, he's huge. But second of all, the way that the NFL rules are set up is that for joint practices and training camp, the team disciplines, not
yes.
the NFL. So everyone wants Aaron Donald to get suspended. Aaron Donald, actually, the NFL has no authority. It's actually just the Bengals. Here's Sean McVay on that fight that he saw between his team and the Bengals after.
And because, fortunately, there was no consequences to my understanding, we'll keep it moving and we'll focus on our team having a good game against these guys on Saturday night. I have a lot of respect for Zach Taylor. It doesn't change anything, and it's going to be a really good football team.
I mean, you have two guys in their 30s or early 40s. Like, what are they going to say to Aaron Donald?
I don't know.
Don't do that, Aaron.
Aaron is, again, a very scary dude who plays angry all the time. There have been other instances of this happening in the past. For those who might remember, way back in the day, in a preseason game, Antonio Smith, the Ninja Assassin, perhaps one of the most beloved personalities that's ever played for the Texans, because the guy was just funny as hell, he got into a dust-up with Richie Incognito, and he pulled off Incognito's Richie. Helmet and swung it at him. He ended up getting suspended, I think, the rest of the preseason and the first regular season game, so it was a 3-game suspension. But we also saw what happened on that Monday night football game?
Yeah.
Between the Steelers and
Miles Garrett.
Browns, where Miles Garrett took out a helmet and he smacked Mason Rudolph on the top of the head. I was doing radio in Seattle at the time. This was the first moment I thought, you know what, this might not work out here. Because I thought everyone was acting like this was the most egregious thing ever. And I was like, look, it's bad, but this is not like...
Yeah, you're not meant for Seattle.
This is not a terrorist attack. Can we calm the hell down? Everyone got so mad at me for saying, like, look, he swung his helmet at the guy. I've seen this before. Sorry, I'm not outraged about it. Mason Rudolph is fine. It was a bad look by Miles Garrett. Suspension was merited, but everyone thought that the guy should be like kicked out of the league and sent to jail for
assault. How many games did he have to miss?
6 games.
Which is...
I thought 6 games was fine.
It might actually be a bit much. But people are coming after different media members. We're going to continue this discussion more. A really bad story about the Bills punter, and I believe this guy's nickname is the punt god.
Yeah.
Matt Araiza.
Right.
I don't know if I'm saying that right. He and two other people have been accused of a gang rape last year that allegedly occurred last year. 17-year-old girl. San Diego State football players. Apparently there are texts. Apparently she recorded some voice calls. This does call into question the Bills' leadership because apparently they knew that this was going to happen at the end of July.
It's a weird story. She's a high school senior, but she's under the age of consent in California. And look, just gang rape. I mean, if these allegations are true, the guy's going to jail.
As he should.
Should be cut from the team. But look, we don't know the full details. It's not me providing a defense. Whatever the case, I saw that story yesterday and I was like, good God, this is awful.
It's really disappointing. And as always, we commend women who stick up when things like that have happened. Denzel Mims, frustrated wide receiver Denzel Mims, requests a trade from the New York Jets.
So Baylor.
Yeah. Thoughts
so
on this?
So Baylor. Look, you're not good enough to request a trade. You're a second-round bust at this point in time. You had some contributions your first year in the league. You've had injuries. There are other mitigating factors, perhaps, that are why you're not.
He hasn't scored an NFL touchdown.
But he's saying he should be a starter right. with the Jets. Yeah. He's saying he should be a starter. No, you earn being a starter, and his agent's like, well, he has done everything he can to get on the field. Shut up, dude. This is not how it works. And you're not going to be traded. No one is going to trade much for you. I suppose that, hey, you're empowering yourself. You're taking ownership. But what's likely going to happen is that the Jets are going to cast you aside, and more people, if they were to give you a second chance, are going to wonder whether or not you're just a whiner. So I think this is a bad move by Denzel Mims. Look, you've had some unfortunate circumstances to open up your career, but demanding a trade when you haven't done much, you don't have any leverage here. You just look like an idiot.
Today is National Dog Day, which caused the NFL to tweet, name a player that has that dog in him. A lot of responses, just the picture of Zach Wilson over and over again. Players that have that dog in
him. It's jumped the shark. We need to stop saying it.
You don't want to hear he has that dog in him?
No, I don't.
Here's where it lost meaning for me. Laremy Tunsil saying every player is a dog. Like, not every player. Do you agree, Sean?
Yeah, no.
That's worse than the meow.
Everyone has to earn the doghood. Laremy Tunsil just handing it out willy-nilly. Kind of
like,
a cat move.
Aaron Donald has that dog in him.
Don't insult cats like
Aaron
that.
Aaron Donald... I think dogs have a little bit of... I think dogs have a little bit of Aaron Donald in them. Aaron Donald breaks the scale.
Yeah, a lot of people responding to this with pictures of Michael Vick and what... yeah, the NFL should just know better than to ask questions like this. National Dog Day, though. Shout out to all the good dogs out there. Good boys and girls.
That's not surprising that it would turn into just Michael Vick.
Why do we have to come to work on National Dog Day? It's messed up.
That's true. Please respect my religion.
Come on. What are we doing? Oh, we get Columbus Day off, but not Dog Day?
Shout out to all the dog owners who think they're good dog owners that let their dog run roughshod all over them and anyone that ever comes nearby them. And by the way, I love dogs. I just hate those people.
Yeah, notice it's not National Dog Owners Day.
No.
National Dog Day.
It should never be National Dog Owners Day.
Oh, that's Milo. He drools and bites everybody. Haha.
Fur baby.
And then he eats like a small child.
Right. People need to be aware of their dogs. I love dogs, but people do need to be aware. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we are super excited to have Mike Florio of PFT joining us. And we're going to get his thoughts on things from all around the league. That's next.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. It's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
We are so excited to have our next guest join us. He's a sports writer, author, host, founder of ProFootballTalk.com. Mike Florio, thank you so much for hopping on.
Hey, good to be with you. How's everybody today?
Doing well.
We are doing well, and we're obviously ready for some football. Let's start with the big story of the day, which was Aaron Donald, everything that happened with the Bengals and the Rams. You wrote for ProFootballTalk.com that the Rams should suspend Aaron Donald, and if the Rams don't, the NFL should. Why do you feel that way, and what do you think is going to happen?
Well, we saw what happened a few years ago when Myles Garrett hit Mason Rudolph over the head with his own helmet.
Right.
Rudolph, amazingly, was not seriously injured, and no one was injured yesterday when Aaron Donald started swinging not one but two helmets. But this is the kind of situation where if you don't put a stop to it, eventually it's going to happen and someone is going to be seriously injured. Can you imagine being hit by a helmet swung by someone with the strength of Myles Garrett or Aaron Donald? I am amazed that Rudolph wasn't severely injured. So when the injury happens, what's the NFL going to say? Oh, we had no idea that something like that could occur. Well, it happens, and serious action isn't taken. Now, serious action was taken against Garrett, but if the league or the Rams don't take serious action against Donald, these joint practices can continue to spawn that kind of misconduct. So that's why somebody needs to take a stand. I know the Rams won't be inclined to do it. Now, the league could take action against the Rams for failing to properly control their guys, and maybe the league could say behind the scenes, here's what we're going to do to you if you don't suspend Donald, and maybe what the Rams would experience is worse than not having Donald, so maybe they would. But either way, they just need to do it. I look at the personal conduct policy. It applies with no limitations to time or place, workplace setting, violence or threatened violence against another. Why can't the league activate the process that was just used with Deshaun Watson, use it with Aaron Donald, get him suspended, get him off the field, and move forward? And if they lose a legal fight over that, at least they took a stand for what was right and tried to do it. So I'm a firm believer the league should do something immediately, because I think this is a message that needs to be sent loudly and clearly to all players. In this wild west of joint practices, you can't start swinging helmets around.
We've seen a lot of training camp fights this year, and this is probably the most extreme example of it. And it is kind of interesting that the NFL can't step in. I'm curious, Mike, as to who they would go after. In this situation, it's definitely easy to zoom in on the guy who's swinging his helmet around like it's a battle axe. But if you're actually, I guess, punishing someone or some group of players for a fight that breaks out in a joint practice, would you go after the person who starts the whole thing? Would you go after the person who's the retaliator? I'm curious, and I'm just curious about your opinion on this. What should they do, say they were to implement something to actually punish fights at joint practices?
You go after the person who crosses the line by using helmets as a weapon.
Okay.
And the other stuff, look, that's part of the risk you take when you're going to have joint practices. And there have been coaches in the past, like Sean Payton. Payton refused to do joint practices with the Texans when the Texans were going to be on Hard Knocks because he didn't want to subject his guys to Texans players acting up for the cameras and having a big problem. And then in 2015, the Saints were getting ready to have joint practices with the Patriots, and Payton told his players, if you decide to fight, go ahead and pack your bags now. So it comes down to the coaches properly managing their players and also trusting the players and coaches on the other team. Now, that said, at some level, is it possible that the coaches like to see a little of that piss and vinegar from their players? You know, at some level, is Sean McVay thrilled that the fire is still raging inside Aaron Donald? Yeah, somebody could have gotten hurt, but nobody got hurt. No harm, no foul. I know I got my guy ready to go for 13 days from now. I think coaches try to thread that needle between saying, oh, this is bad, and then saying, oh, this is pretty good.
Yeah, Jeff Saturday on ESPN this morning was talking about the fact that Tony Dungy would fine them if they punched anybody in practice like he would for a game. So there's a lot of different angles to take. One of the biggest stories in the NFL that obviously had a big presence here in Houston was everything involving Deshaun Watson. It seemed like the story that would never end, and it really doesn't seem over yet. Why do you think the NFL went back from their offer of Deshaun Watson originally, a 12-game suspension? It's 11. Why wasn't he out a whole year? There are so many questions involving everything. What do you know?
Well, I think the general sense is the league just wanted it to be over. Paul Tagliabue, the former commissioner of the NFL's favorite saying was, all's well that ends. And this thing had hung around and hung around, and now we have finality, we have clarity. Although it's not over, we know that he's going to be back, and it's going to be a big story because his first game back is going to be in Houston. That assumes he complies with all of the requirements of evaluation and treatment, and given that he continues to take the position, at least as of last Thursday, that he stands on his innocence, that could be a problem if he continues to stand on his innocence when he's otherwise undergoing treatment that will require him at some point, I would assume, to acknowledge that he engaged in behaviors he shouldn't have engaged in. So I think the league potentially feared a civil lawsuit in federal court that would have raised the question of whether or not owners have truly been held to a higher standard than players, when the personal conduct policy expressly says that owners and club and league management will be held to a higher standard. You know, the Texans with 30 settlements they had, what was done to them, what will be done to them, will anyone be investigated there for facilitating, aiding and abetting, et cetera, the Deshaun Watson misconduct. So you throw all the factors into a blender, and they decided that 11 games, $5 million, which is half the salary he made last year when he didn't play, which is not an insignificant amount of money, and this requirement for counseling and treatment and evaluation was an acceptable deal. Although I would suspect there were some people at 345 Park Avenue who just wanted to drop the hammer and take the fight and move on. Because just like with Aaron Donald, there's something to be said for standing up for what's right, even if you ultimately lose in court.
Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk with us. It is really strange, though, that if they want this story to go away, hey, let's have a game between the Texans and Cleveland Browns be Deshaun Watson's first game back, because I feel like that's going to be perhaps the one of the biggest conversations taking place in an early December game.
Well, I agree with you, and it hit me last week once I was trying to process why they would go ahead and agree to let him come back with that being his first game. I look at it this way. Some game was going to be his first game back, and that was going to be a big deal. And eventually, he was going to go back to Houston, and that was going to be a big deal. So you kind of rip off two Band-Aids at once, because now you don't have some future game that is his first game back to Houston. His first game back is his first game back to Houston, and the net distraction from doing it all at once is less than first game back, which was always going to be a big deal, first game back in Houston, which was always going to be a big deal. So that's the only way that this makes sense. And I think it was as simple as the NFLPA was stuck on 10 games, the NFL was stuck on 12 games, and short of negotiating a suspension that would have let him come back at halftime of a game, which is ridiculous if you think about it, it had to be a full game. So the midpoint between 10 and 12 is 11, and I think that's why it ended up where it was.
Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk joining us now. Mike, obviously, we have covered the Texans so closely for the past couple of years. Everything involving the DeAndre Hopkins trade, Jack Easterby, Deshaun Watson. What is the national narrative of the Texans now? Because we're looking at it so closely here, but obviously you cover all of the teams, right? So what's the national narrative about the direction the Texans are going?
Well, it's to be determined. Now, the value that they got for Deshaun Watson, I think, impressive in hindsight, given the 11-game suspension and the distraction that it would have caused and the issues that would still hang around. There's still one unsettled civil lawsuit against Deshaun Watson, so there may be a trial at some point. Who knows? The victim in that case, the alleged victim, says that one of the reasons she hasn't settled is because he has shown no remorse. So that would be part of what's hanging around the Texans. So I think Nick Caserio did a masterful job of maximizing value for Deshaun Watson in trade. And now we just go forward and see what they do. The reality is I see 13 contenders in the AFC, and then there are the Jaguars, the Texans, and the Jets. And I think that especially when you consider the quality of those 13 teams, and I think any of those 13 teams, if things go the right way for them, could make a deep playoff run and potentially get to the Super Bowl, I think that just makes it very hard for the Texans to do anything. The good news is they're in the same division as the Jaguars. And the Titans could be down this year. We don't know. The Colts, who knows what they're going to be, although indications are they could be pretty good. But of all the divisions to be in, it's better than the West, the North, or the East. So they do have an opportunity to maybe string together some games. And, you know, Davis Mills recently said they could shock the world. And if they're 8-9, 9-8 in the playoff conversation after Thanksgiving, that would shock the world, because we just look at them and say they're not going to be very good. It's going to be another four-win season.
Mike, I know you found out the hard way that no one cares about your fantasy football team on Pro Football, or excuse me, on a part of my take a couple of times, but I think a lot of people are curious as to what the heck's going on with Alvin Kamara, because of the fact that there is a video supposedly of him punching a man 8 times in Las Vegas, and it seems like there should be a suspension at any point for him. Do you think he'll be suspended this coming year?
They won't impose final punishment until the criminal case has been resolved. They could put him on paid leave, but they have shown no inclination to do that. And the paid leave analysis, I don't know whether there's a formula. I don't know what the factors are. I don't know what makes the league consider it in one case and not in another case. But right now, there's no change in his status. The league continues to monitor the situation. I ask him about it once every month or so. The criminal case, this is a felony charge, felony battery. And, yeah, it's got a potentially significant outcome for Alvin Kamara. But right now, I think the wind is blowing in the direction of him being available all year, with next year potentially being the time that he would serve an unpaid suspension. I know he's bracing for 6 games. That's the baseline for this type of an allegation. It can go up, it can go down based upon aggravating or mitigating factors. But he's looking at that baseline of 6. And Tony Busby, as we now know, is going to be suing Kamara and others. But it's on video. And I'm surprised it's taken this long to really sort of come to a head. I thought it would be resolved before we got to the season, but it hasn't, and I think it's going to linger, and it probably gets resolved at some point in 2023.
Before we let you go, what is going on with Jimmy Garoppolo? Trey Lance was not very impressive last night. Are they going to trade him? Are they going to cut him? What are you hearing?
Well, August 30 is the day the rosters go to 53, and I think they're going to keep him beyond August 30, even though that means using a roster spot on him, because they're waiting for lightning to strike somewhere with a season-ending injury to a quarterback like we saw 6 years ago with Teddy Bridgewater. That ended up getting the Eagles a first-round pick and a fourth-round pick for Sam Bradford, and they turned the page to Carson Wentz. So I think they're waiting for that. They've been waiting for that. The question is, will they keep him after week one? They have until 4 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, September 10, to cut him and avoid having his $24.2 million salary come as a practical matter guaranteed. If they keep him beyond then, what's the end game there? Are they going to wait until the trade deadline? And then after the trade deadline, do they do with him what the Browns did with Odell Beckham Jr. last year, where basically, hey, you know what, your salary's guaranteed, but if you want to be released so you have a chance to go play somewhere, you have to agree to take half of it or less than half of it or whatever the case may be. So they could save some of that money. They could spend 8 weeks of it to keep him on the roster and keep the door open for a possible trade, or if Trey Lance would get injured. That would be the ultimate irony. They're waiting for a season-ending injury, and it happens to Lance. And then after the trade deadline comes and goes, they could work out a deal where they release him. That could still occur. And I think it would be crazy for the 49ers to do it, but it wouldn't surprise me if they did.
Mike Florio, we appreciate your time so much. He is at Pro Football Talk on Twitter, as well as the show with Chris Sims every day. Thank you for your time.
All right, thanks. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant talking about that Texans preseason game last night. That's next.
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 98.7.
Wait, what?
I said 98.7. That's my show.
Let's try this one more time, okay?
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 97.5 FM.